The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you? Welcome to Stuff Mom Never Told You from HowStuffWorks.com. Hey there, and welcome to the podcast. This is Kristen.
And this is Molly.
So Molly, on the podcast, we've had a couple of discussions about birth control.
Yes.
And in response to that, we'd gotten some listener mail from a number of women who talked about how birth control does not work for every woman, especially with the hormones. A lot of times they would try different, especially oral contraceptives, and the hormones would just kind of throw their body out of whack, and it was a really frustrating process for them. And along those same lines, some of those same listeners brought up the IUD, which is a form of birth control that we're hearing about a little bit more in the media.
Yes,
but this is truly, and I'm stealing this from you because you mentioned this earlier, this is truly something that our moms probably never told us, because the IUD has a storied past.
Oh, yes. I'm sure there are women of a certain age listening to this podcast and hearing that we're going to start talking about IUDs, aka intrauterine devices, and they're probably shocked. They think we're about to advocate death. And infertility, things for women out there. But, the IUD is really experiencing sort of a resurgence in the United States. But the question we want to talk about today is, why is it even having a resurgence? Why is it so unpopular to begin with? Because when you start listing the positives, it's great. It's 99% right. Effective as a birth control method. There's a huge upfront cost, a few hundred bucks to insert it, but then, that's it. You don't have the monthly cost of something like birth control. But only 2% of women in the United States use it. 2% of women who are on birth control. Why?
So before we answer that question, Molly, I think that we should just briefly say what exactly the IUD is.
Let's.
It's different from the pill. You don't eat it. You don't shoot it. I guess the closest thing you could compare it to would be the ring, because it's about an inch long and it's T-shaped, and a gynecologist inserts it into the uterus where it stays. And then there are a pair of strings that hang down from it.
And in the United States, there are two main brands of it. One of them has hormones that'll shoot out some progestogen into your uterus every so often. And then the other one is made of copper, and it doesn't have that hormone shot, which is why it's such a good option for women who can't take oral contraceptives for one reason or another. It's just there's none of that hormone jumping around.
Right. And basically what the IUD does is it blocks interaction between the sperm and the egg, so the sperm can never fertilize the egg and never make it a baby.
Mm-hmm. 99% effective. Yeah. And what happens is you install it and then you forget about it. You know, some birth control methods like the pill, you have to take something every day at the same time.
Right.
Whereas with these, you can just put them up there and leave them for 5 to 12 years.
Right. The hormonal one lasts 5 years and then the copper option lasts up to, like you said, 12 years.
But we'll get back to our current options in a minute. But first, let's go back to the 1970s. I guess the word would be heyday for the IUD in the United States. About 10% of women used them then.
Right. This was developed around the same time as the pill. And a lot of women started using the IUD. But then in 1973, it all came crashing down when there was a series of congressional hearings about a specific IUD called the Dalcon Shield that was linked to a lot of deaths from septic miscarriages. And it was also linked to pelvic inflammatory disease and then infertility caused by that.
Right. So doctors would only want to prescribe them for women who had already had families because there was such a huge link in people's heads with infertility that they didn't want to take the chance on a young, fertile woman having her life ruined by this birth control method. But, you know, part of the problem was is that at that time they weren't doing a lot of testing for STDs. And so a bigger marker of how you become infertile is an untreated case of gonorrhea or syphilis or the like. And these women had these STDs that went unnoticed and sort of, you know, there's just unfortunate linkage between the IUD and the infertility.
Right. The way those strings were designed that hang down from the IUD, it actually kind of attracted the bacteria further up into a woman's cervix and uterus, just making it the infection even worse.
Yeah, there was a lot of pelvic inflammatory disease. Kristen, before this podcast, described this unfortunately designed object as a bacterial straw.
Yeah.
Because basically the strings that they use now on IUDs are much different than that original design, which really did just sort of suck up all the bacteria and leave it there.
But at the same time, this bad press did not seep over to European and Asian women as much at all.
Right. When the U.S. pharmaceutical industry just basically stopped researching this and making this, that effect wasn't felt elsewhere.
Yeah. And the interesting is today China is one of the leaders in IUD development. It's a very popular birth control option in Asia. And in France, I think 23% of women who are on birth control use the IUD as opposed to, like you said, 2% of women in the United States.
Yeah. In China, like you said, they're the big leaders in this. 45% of married women use an IUD.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty staggering.
Yeah, so now we're kind of seeing the resurgence, the return of the IUD as a safe and reliable form of birth control in the U.S., I think particularly because of these two products that you mentioned, the Mirena and the Paragard, that have been tested and deemed very safe to use.
Right. Mirena is the one that we've been talking about that releases the steady amount of hormone directly into the uterus. And even if you are sort of susceptible to the hormonal shifts of an oral contraceptive, there's some evidence that if it goes directly into the uterus, you might feel less of an effect. But that's the one that's good for 5 years. And the bonus is that it may actually make your period lighter or non-existent. One possible benefit, there may be some spotting, but that's one possible benefit to this.
Right. And on the flip side of that, the Paragard brand IUD, which is the one that's made out of copper, has been shown to increase bleeding. You'll probably have a much heavier flow for the first few weeks after it's inserted. But gynecologists say that will taper off.
Now, one effect of this sort of generational gap about knowledge of the IUD is you may not be able to easily find a doctor who can insert the IUD. They did some study where, you know, people in medical school very rarely learned in lectures how to insert one. You know, if they happened to see one when they were out on rounds or observing another doctor, that might be how they learn. But now we have a lot of doctors who don't necessarily know how to insert the device and may not recommend it to their patients because they're still in that old research mindset.
Right. And being able to correctly insert the device is a huge part of whether or not it's going to work for a woman, because there is a chance that after it's inserted, if it's inserted improperly, it could slip or shift and it's not going to either work effectively, or it could actually cause pelvic perforation, which can heal back, but, you know, still be cause of some discomfort.
It's pretty rare, but interestingly, it seems to happen most to young women who haven't had children. We mentioned earlier that doctors tended to recommend this form of birth control for women who had had their families. But it's still a perfectly legitimate birth control for women who haven't had babies yet. It just might be harder to insert, and there might be more of a chance that it would sort of dislodge itself in the first few months. So it's very important that women who choose this method do self-examinations regularly to make sure that the string from the IUD is still about where it was before. The length of the string hasn't, you know, it hasn't disappeared. It hasn't gotten longer to indicate it's coming out. You do have to check that pretty regularly.
Right. And as far as availability of an IUD goes, you might have to do some searching around. For instance, an article published in Slate magazine found that only 58% of family planning clinics in the U.S. even offer the IUD.
And even those that offer it may not be as willing to give it to these young women who haven't had children because of that old research, but also because it's important to remember that, like oral contraceptives, the IUD does not protect against sexually transmitted diseases. So it would be preferable to have a woman who's in a long-term monogamous relationship, you know, get this method of birth control.
Yeah, and if you are a woman who's thinking about possibly getting an IUD inserted, the American Family Physician has some characteristics of good candidates for IUD use. And among those are women who have a problem remembering to take their oral birth control at the same time every day, women who are breastfeeding, women who are at low risk for sexually transmitted diseases, women who are finished having children, because there have also been studies that show that the IUD can be even more effective than tubal ligation.
And cheaper.
And cheaper over the long run. And finally, women who want a reversible, long-term, and cost-effective birth control method. I think those three factors right there are pretty huge selling points.
Yeah, and let's talk about the reversible thing real quick. In a lot of other countries, they get IUDs instead of having a tubal ligation just because you can change your mind. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes women do make that decision that they're done having children, but for whatever reason, then later they regret it. And so the chance of regret can be lower if you have this reversible method, because as soon as you take it out, baby factory is ready to go.
Ready to go. And on the flip side of that, it takes effect once it's inserted pretty quickly as well. I think even faster than oral contraceptives.
That is true.
But always remember that the IUD does not prevent against STD. So condoms in that case are necessary.
Good job, Kristen.
It's my public health announcement.
I like it.
Of the week.
So that's a little bit of information on this non-hormonal method of birth control. You know, definitely ask your doctor if you're interested. It's going to have to be a discussion between you and the doctor.
Everybody's body's different.
That's true.
And if you want to do some research on the IUD before you head over to your doctor, there is a lot of research out there, especially on Planned Parenthood's website and American Family Physician, if you want to learn some more about that.
Yeah, and I'll give a quick shout out to Kate Klonick at Slate, who did write the article that Kristen mentioned earlier that served as a lot of our, that provided a lot of the research that we used in this podcast.
Yes, thank you, Kate.
So, just like every woman's body is different, every person's reading list is different.
Ooh, nice transition, Molly. To listener mail.
To listener mail. Let's do someone's reading list. Today's reading list comes from Zoe, who is 13 and lives in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Zoe has a very impressive reading list that makes me feel a little bit ashamed about how short mine is, because not only did she send us 32 books that she's read this summer, she's read most of them twice.
Wow.
So she is a reader. Some of her books include Peter Pan by J.M. Barrie, The Sorceress by Michael Scott, The Princess and the Bear by Met Ivy Harrison, Rose Bride by Nancy Holder, Snow by Tracy Lynn, and Sherlock Holmes, Volume 1 and 2 by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, as well as many Louisa May Alcott books, which is nice to see girls reading, Little Women being one of my favorite books.
I was a big fan of that myself, Molly.
Wow. See, even though we're all different, we can find common ground.
Yes. And if you would like to learn more about what Molly and I are doing day to day here at How Stuff Works, you should head over to our blog. It's called How To Stuff. And you can find our blog and other articles about IUDs, birth control, and reproduction over at howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Want more How Stuff Works? Check out our blogs on the HowStuffWorks.com homepage.
brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off. Starts Friday and open Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
What kind of fun is waiting for you at Kings Island? The holy cow, we're way too high and here comes the drop kind of fun. The make a splash all summer kind of fun. The I can't believe I ate that whole funnel cake. Let's get another kind of fun. But most importantly, at Kings Island, you'll find for the fun of it kind of fun.
Don't wait to start your fun this season. Kings Island opens its gates April 20th.